War Room, Impeachment. With Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome to War Room Impeachment, live from the Breitbart Embassy, right near, hard near the Supreme Court and across the plaza from the Capitol, where today begins week two of the public inquiry into the impeachment of the 45th President of the United States, Donald J. Trump. We're here live on the John Fredericks Radio Network, also on Salem Radio Network, nationwide, and live streamed on americasvoice.news. Also, warroom.org. You can go up on the website, get all the episodes. All you have to do is subscribe, leave a review. It's all free. Even better. We're here at 19th of November, the year of our Lord, 2019. It's episode 36. We'll want to announce we're going to have a special episode this afternoon at 5 o'clock to wrap up the hearings. We've already started with Colonel Vindman. I want to introduce my two wingmen, Raheem Kassam from the United Kingdom, UKIP fame, Nigel Farage's right-hand man, set up and ran the war room that eventually led to Brexit. Also, Jason Miller, the communication strategist in charge of the 2016 Trump campaign, the biggest political comeback in American political history, and the transition communications director. We're also honored to have one of the not just best guys in the conservative movement, but somebody that's made a massive impact institutionally over the last couple of years. It's Tom Fitton of Judicial Watch. Tom, thank you very much. You've been involved in so many of these issues over the years, but now you've taken such a lead role in this. I want to get to you in a second.
Sure.
Let's reset the clock, or reset what's happening today. Vindman's up there live. In fact, I want to go to you, Tom. Vindman's up there as a lieutenant colonel in full dress uniform, National Security Council. How does that sit with you?
I don't understand it. I didn't serve in the military, but my general understanding is to appear in uniform in a political setting like this is, to put it mildly, controversial.
Do you believe this a political setting or a service to the nation?
Well, he's testifying against the President of the United States, criticizing the Commander-in-Chief. You know, my understanding is the rules prohibit you from doing that as an officer. I don't understand who at the Defense Department is allowing him to testify in uniform. My guess is he doesn't go to work at the White House every day in uniform. Why is he showing up here than to use the uniform to make a political point against the Commander-in-Chief?
Is this deep state?
This is the in-your-face state, and there's nothing deep state or hidden about this. I mean, the fact of the matter is you have someone who's active duty military working at the White House who's showing in to a political investigation. I mean, go to Federalist Paper 65. This is inherently a political process. We are seeing him just outright undermining the chain of command. Lieutenant Colonel Vindman would never undermine the chain of command like this on the battlefield where he nobly served, but here he is doing it in front of the nation's cameras.
Let's go. We've got live testimony, so Raheem's going to be breaking in as we go. Colonel Vindman and Jennifer Williams, who's on the vice president's staff. And Jennifer Williams is one of his foreign policy advisors, but how's that staff set up?
Yeah, and just to let folks know on this, so she is part of the NSC, the National Security Council, but she's a staffer that's being detailed to the vice president's team. Anyone knows anything about the White House structure or the vice president's operation knows that General Keith Kellogg, who we worked with on the campaign, great guy, someone who I really admire. He is the go-to for foreign policy for Vice President Pence, and one who travels with him, the one who essentially has his ear at all times. President Trump has no idea who Jennifer Williams is. I mean, this is probably the first time he's ever even seen her speak, but yet she's on the attack and trying to get inside President Trump's head. She's a nobody, but the Democrats are giving her this platform.
So, Raheem, set up today. What are we watching? We've got a double hitter, two in the morning and two later, right?
Yeah, that's right. Adam Schiff, Chairman Schiff, is giving his opening statement right now ahead of the questioning of Jennifer Williams and Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman. That is expected to go in a couple of hours. And then after that, Kurt Volker, the former U.S. Special Envoy to Ukraine, and Tim Morrison, the top Russia director and Europe advisor on the National Security Council, he who replaced Fiona Hill. Now, the morning is set to be a lot more grueling, I think, for the president and for his base.
Why do you say that?
This watching this will be perhaps at some times painful.
Why Why do you say that?
I am getting there. Okay, he will be under relentless assault by these two who have made clear from their opening statements in their private depositions that they believe that he has done everything wrong that he could have potentially done wrong.
What's the most powerful thing that they weaponized on Vindman, Tom?
Well, his uniform. Otherwise, he's a junior official in the National Security Council complaining about what his boss was up to. All the reporting is he wasn't trusted by his colleagues at the National Security Council. He's likely the leaker to the Schiff leaker. So you're going to see Schiff suppressing evidence today in the morning like he's probably never done before. If the Republicans are doing their job, they're going to be asking him questions about who he was talking to.
And walk us back through that. Let's go back to a chain of title. Walk us through, what do you mean he's the leaker? Number one, why did people in the NSC either not trust him or didn't think he was doing his job because of the his focus on Ukraine?
Morrison, who will testify later, testified there were questions about his judgment. And even Flynn Hill, who's no friend of President Trump, didn't think much of his judgment as well. And he was upset that he was kept out of some of the decision-making related to his portfolio.
This plays to your initial mark about chain of command. We know from Morrison that Fiona Hill ran a different shop and guys were just reporting up and stuff like that. And when Morrison came in, he said, hey, we have a chain of command. You got to come through me. Vindman had a reputation of going around and just, and one of those guys that's a lieutenant colonel, thinks he ought to be a general, right? And thinks he ought to be a big shot.
Oh, even worse, he thinks he needs to be president. He's criticizing, he heard the transcript or they heard the call same way Miss Williams did, and they're criticizing the contents of the call, which we all see. So why is their view on this any more significant than the voters or congressmen or senators? This is the Gossip Girl impeachment. This is water cooler kvetching by bureaucrats in the White House about what the boss is saying and doing. Well, that may all be nice, but the idea that that rises to the level of impeachment shows you the abomination that's happening right now.
And again, there's an important letter that Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin sent over to the folks in the House yesterday. And just Ron Johnson, he was on a couple of these trips to the Ukraine.
A couple of trips. He went to the inauguration. I mean, he was part of the official delegation, right?
Part of that, along with Rick Perry.
And talked to the president about aid.
Exactly.
And so
corruption.
So the Republicans in the House asked Johnson basically for anything he knows about all things Ukraine. And he came back with some really pointed commentary on Vindman. And he said during the trip, Vindman was stating that the U.S.'s position should be separate from our geopolitical competition with Russia, essentially saying here's how things have always been, here's what I believe U.S. foreign policy should be, and then we're just going to do that separately from anything President Trump wants.
And Jason's point on Vindman. Go back to you said something about Schiff, Vindman, leaker. He's the guy. Is this tied up with the whistleblower? Walk people through there, because sometimes the details people get confused.
And this is reading between the lines, looking at what happened during the depositions. So Vindman was asked about who did he brief on the call. Schiff jumped in. Vindman's lawyer jumped in and said, you can't ask about that because that would lead potentially to the identity of the leaker. Then Morrison's question about whether...
The leaker to the whistleblower.
He's the leaker to the leaker. I never call him a whistleblower.
Right.
He's the Schiff leaker.
Okay.
So this is the alleged CIA guy. Morrison was also concerned about Vindman's propensity to leak. There were concerns other than even this issue. And so...
Where did he pick that up from?
Well, it was unclear because, again, Schiff and, in this case, Morrison's lawyer jumped in and said, no, we can't answer these questions. So they're desperately trying to protect those
hermetically seal these guys from any kind of questioning of about exactly what did you do in the chain of command and as your duty as an officer, as a member of the NSC. How did you actually comport yourself?
There's a strong implication that Vindman violated the chain of command, I don't know if literally, but certainly within the White House, by briefing this person in the CIA. And these are the issues I've raised.
That's 100%. I don't think there's any doubt about that. If they did that, that's outside you're supposed to keep that stuff high and tight inside the NSC.
And the contents of this call was classified at the time. So there are issues of legality about whether Vindman appropriately talked to this leaker, whether this leaker appropriately talked to him, and the communication with Schiff. Schiff is compromised. He has, talk about someone who needs to be recusing himself. He needs to be under investigation rather than conducting an investigation.
For what?
for being Tom Fitton of Judicial Watch, the hammer.
So
for his staff, and I don't know what his knowledge of what his staff did or what he did, but his staff is implicated potentially in obtaining improperly classified information from the CIA leaker about this call.
And Tom, there's no way that Adam Schiff didn't know that his staff was working with a whistleblower and that they weren't talking to him beforehand.
That's for a grand jury to figure out.
Was that a bald-faced lie?
I think absolutely. I mean,
I think he knows who the whistleblower is. I'm sure it's been confirmed to him. He already lied once about his office's communications with the whistleblower, and he's been lying repeatedly about
Trump. Plus his fake phone call.
Okay, listen, I'm going to jump in here. We got to sell some ads, pay some bills. This is War Room Impeachment, Episode 36. We're live in the Breitbart Embassy. Raheem Kassam, Jason Miller, Tom Fitton from Judicial Watch is joining us. We're going to take a short commercial break. We'll return in just a moment.
War Room Impeachment. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Live from the Breitbart Embassy, it's War Room Impeachment, Episode 36. Listen to the John Frederick Radio Network, also on the Salem Radio Network nationwide, and americasvoice.news. More distribution news about where you can get this coming later this week. Raheem Kassam, Jason Miller, our honored guest, Tom Fitton. Jason, let's go to there's a little special show today for the simple reasons that they've already started the hearings. Raheem will be jumping in with breaking news of Raheem to sleep there on his opening. Nothing on the opening statement at all, Raheem?
Nothing interesting from Adam Schiff, just regurgitating the same old narrative.
But that's important. He's resetting this. This is a framework they're putting into the American people's mind. Remember, this is the first day. I think this audience is going to be bigger, I believe going to be bigger than the 12 million or 13 million because of just all the media attention it's getting.
Remember, I'm speaking as somebody who's watching this stuff day in and day out, so I would be bored by what Adam Schiff said. Sure, if you're tuning in for the first time, that may have been of interest to you. Devin Nunes, again, resetting the Republican argument now, going over the same response that there's merit to it. There's merit to the American public hearing time and time again from both sides, whether you're on Adam Schiff's side. You know, here is what happened. His key takeaway always is there was a parallel national security and foreign policy track being run without the knowledge or the understanding of all these expert bureaucrats. And Devin Nunes' response is typically, you know, the everything they've told you so far has either unraveled or turned out to be flimsy. And I think, hope with any luck, the Republicans will be able to show the flimsiness and the contradictory nature of some of these testimonies in the coming
few days. Fitton's, It's Tom Fitton's the gossip girl impeachment, right? It's water cooler. People heard something. You know, it could have been better, but it might have been this. Everything like that.
Yeah, and you know, I have to say, this may be whistleblowing past the graveyard, but they had their chance last week.
What a heckle! They had their chance last week?
The coup cabal had their chance last week. Right. Wednesday was their opening shot. Grab people's attention, they move on. It's like a show. You know, you got your first 5 minutes, and they leave, and they don't come back.
Bill McGinley said he was in that seat last week. He said they didn't get a knockout punch opening day like they thought and draw people in. Now it's a war of attrition. This is in the trenches between the Tom Fittons of the world, the war room impeachments, and, of course, the media apparatus, the polling apparatus. And let's talk – there's some smart things actually going on. We've talked about making them famous. We talked about the retirees, the 20 retirees you got to hold to zero votes. The battleground here is the 31 districts and those people that we've already made a couple of them famous. Those congressmen, Max Rose, Lieutenant Commander, Mickey Sherrill, up in New Jersey 11. It's these people that the pressure got to come on. But we now know that one of the PACs, it's reported in Politico today, I think, Gabby Orr, has a very interesting story. Tell us about that, and then I want to have Fitton respond.
Yeah, so America First Priorities, which is led by Brian Walsh, who's a very smart guy, I've known for a couple of decades. They're out with a story, like you said, in Politico, where they went and did focus groups in all the swing states all over, and they split up with a couple of the pollsters and had the opportunity to chat with one of them for about a half hour this morning. Here are a couple of things. Tom, to your point, what are people, and again, the pollster said it's easier to fill a stadium full of Trump haters than it is to get a room of truly independent people who haven't made up their mind. Like, it's just, the numbers now, because look, everything's become polarized where it is.
Right.
But here is the big takeaway, that just like we're saying, it's too confusing. This is a waste of time. This is a waste of money. That is the key takeaway to all these impeachment hearings from folks who are truly independent. Now, they screened out, as I said, the Trump likers and the Trump haters, which is very hard to do. Once the voters got past the first few minutes of what they the media tells them as far as mean tweets or so-called behavioral things, they love what President Trump's doing on policy. But the Democrats' mistake here, and this is something that we've been saying, but it's good to hear that it's backed up by independent or people who are swing voters, they believe that Democrats have gone too far here. They made it too political. They made it too personal. They made it too emotional. I think a lot of that's blowing back on how we saw last week. And also the thing that's being rejected too are Democrats' policy proposals. They just don't think that they're inside the mainstream. So the regular folks are looking at this. They don't get the names. They don't get the process. All they know is it's a partisan fight. And that's why polling that we saw in the New York Times even says that people aren't being moved either way on this. Either you look at it and they're just, this is a bunch of jumble for them.
You know, my guess is there are a few honest Democrats, and they are out there, certainly in the Hill, who are asking Adam Schiff, why have you been lying to us? You said you had the goods on Donald Trump, and you don't have the goods. That was proven last week. You're going to have two witnesses testify today who complain about the phone call. Well, you know, get in line. Who cares? No one voted for them. The voters can make their own judgment. They don't see a problem with the phone call. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having hearings. You have to remember, these hearings are an indication that the other side is failing. They never wanted to have them. And it was the pushback on the lack of due process, the secrecy, the coup aspects of what they were doing. They said, okay, we'll go through the hearings. And the hearings aren't working out well for them. And we should have known that because they never wanted to have them to begin with.
Do you think that this week's the last of the public hearings, once they tie this up, that they then take Thanksgiving, everybody argues about it, they come back and they deliver a report to Judiciary, but there's no more. They don't let Nadler, since Corey Lewandowski bench-pressed him on national TV, they don't let Nadler and Judiciary run any more hearings. We're by the end of this week, we'll see all the hearings we're going to see.
Well, we'll see what their polling tells us. They're impeaching by polling now. They figured out to use the word bribery after they went back and polled someone. They didn't even know what they were impeaching him over until they asked a focus group
themselves. Let's go to this.
Quick thing I'll say on the polling also, and again, this is with the true swing voters, some thoughts on Biden that are popping up. Number one, a lot of the similarities with Hillary Clinton. The swing voters really view Joe Biden as being part of the swamp. They don't like the Hunter Biden dynamics. This is something the left always attacks us, and they say, oh, you're just throwing this Hunter Biden thing out there as a canard. You don't really believe that. Guess what? That is the swamp. The fact he was making between 50 and 80 grand a month, this is resonating with voters.
Did the left throw him? Did the left throw Biden under the bus to get to Trump? Did they throw... But they were willing to do that, Tom?
Yeah, they're willing to lose the House, and they want to take out Trump, and they don't care if Biden's the one who does it. But it's also about protecting Biden. You had two witnesses who, again, they didn't want to have testify last week. They had concerns. The Obama State Department had concerns about the Biden-Ukraine scandal. So we get further.
Yeah, because they prepped her. The ambassador was prepped in her confirmation hearing. She had to go through. They were prepped on the whole Hunter Biden thing. That's a huge tell.
Kent was warning internally about it.
In fact, their own witnesses.
I had to intervene to stop Burisma from getting our tax dollars during the Obama administration.
What do you got there, sir? You got about a minute to go.
I just want to summarize that Devin Nunes is in the opening statement pertained a lot to Hunter Biden. Just breaking news coming in from the testimonies right now. And also, strangely, I will say this, Devin Nunes focusing a lot on the defense of the journalism of John Solomon, entering articles by John Solomon into the record, talking about how John Solomon's character is under attack.
It's a huge story in CNN today, that's why, about the Rudy DeSolomon situation.
Yeah, but it seemed out of place in the opening statement today, and Nunes's defense really wasn't very compelling at all. So now they're moving on to, Adam Schiff is now moving on to...
The first part of his was about what, before Solomon was...
Hunter Biden.
Hunter Biden should... Okay, we've got about a minute before we got to go to break. Should Hunter... Tom Fenton, Judicial Watch, should Hunter Biden... be forced to testify in front of this tribunal?
Oh, sure. Both Bidens should come in.
Senator Biden?
And the vice president. And certainly the whistleblower. A key part of the president's defense, if he was allowed to present one, which he isn't allowed to be, shows you the abominable nature of this, is, did I have a good faith reason for asking Ukraine about the Bidens? Well, how do you mount that defense unless Hunter comes in and talks? Unless these other witnesses come in and talk.
Okay, we're going to sell a few ads and pay the rent here. It is War Room Impeachment, Episode 36, Kasam, Miller, Bannon, honored guest Tom Fitton. We're going to take a short commercial break. We'll return to the Breitbart Embassy live momentarily.
War Room, Impeachment. With Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment, live from the Breitbart Embassy, yards from the Supreme Court and from the Capitol, where the historic day of the second week of live hearings in the impeachment of Donald J. Trump, the 45th president of the United States. You know, Greg Gutfeld said yesterday on The Five, you saw that, nothing of this should be covered. You should just throw it away. It's a complete sham, a complete farce. Do you believe that, Fenton?
Yeah, I mean, these hearings...
We shouldn't give this any coverage at all?
Well, I mean, probably not, but these hearings are an abuse, and the coverage needs to be honest that this is just part of the story. The president's being denied the ability to question witnesses, call witnesses. Republicans have been denied the ability to call witnesses. There's not one witness here that Republicans have been able to call directly. Now, they brought witnesses in the Republicans did want to talk to, but the specific witnesses they've asked for, none of them have been blessed as, quote, Republican witnesses. And this is a and I have to say, the president hasn't been well served by the legal defenses around him in the Justice Department.
What do you mean by
the White
that?
House counsel? I think the defenses have collapsed. These witnesses, for instance.
What do you mean collapsed?
Well, they haven't gone to court to stop witnesses from testifying in a way that violates the president's prerogatives as president, that protects classified information, protects executive branch communications, presidential communications. And it doesn't mean they don't testify at all, but it allows the president, at least in the process, in my view, in the end, it would have allowed the president to be there to protect the institution of the presidency and the Constitution and his own civil rights.
Okay, go back through this. People don't understand, by the way, Judicial Watch, I've always called it the People's Justice Department. During the Obama years, you were fighting the good fight. In fact, many people don't realize, Tom Fitton, we wouldn't know about the 33,000 Hillary Clinton emails if it was not for you doing work and Dave Bossi early on in 2013 and 14 on FOIA request, relentlessly going after the State Department. Right? You've been after the State Department for as a nest of vipers for a long time.
The career foreign service equals the deep state. They were defending Hillary. They ignored the Benghazi scandal, pretended nothing went wrong there. They are still defending Hillary to this day. And as these State Department officials line up to target the president, they are protecting Hillary. You saw.
Is that what this is about, the foreign policy debate between the Albright, Kerry, McCain, Bush, Hillary Clinton, Obama foreign policy of the permanent political class versus America First?
Anyone but Trump's foreign policy. And you see Ambassador Yovanovitch. She could give a rat's tail about the Ukraine corruption in terms of the intervention on.
She's the queen of the corruption,
no,
anti-corruption.
She was ignoring
all
the corruption.
Adam Schiff told me that in the opening statement. Adam Schiff said she's the one you've dedicated your life to rooting out corruption in the Ukraine.
Except for the corruption targeting the president of the United States in our election system. It shows you this. This is the what we're seeing is a deep state coup cabal coming forward, getting testifying without any pushback, without the president being able to institute his prerogatives.
Yeah, and Tom, the only thing that added that is they're so aggressive now that they're putting it in their face. I mean, could you ever imagine back during, say, the Reagan administration, that you would have senior State Department people with personalized vanity plates driving around Arlington with "Free Crimea" written.
This is Kent.
This is George
right.
Kent. He has the
with free, the daughter with the podcast.
Right. He has at the Kiev Post. He has a "Free Crimea" license plate written in Crimean Tatar. His wife has one written in Ukrainian. I mean, but this is they're activists now. They're no longer advisors.
Who at the Defense Department let Vindman testify in uniform?
You're saying the chief. This goes up to the chief of staff of the Army. Well,
who's responsible? Who's responsible? If I were the president, I'd be saying, who's responsible for one of my officers going around trying to undermine my foreign policy? Who's responsible?
I want to go back. So we got about a minute and a half in this segment. This is a short segment. I want to go back to something you just said because people can't understand this. After Pat Scipione's letter, the 8-page letter, why? This is what our audience can't get. Why are there people that are still working in the White House today? Why are they up giving secret testimony at the Adam Schiff's Star Chamber and then coming up on national TV at the Moscow show trials here and testifying? How is that happening?
I don't understand. And, you know, people like Mulvaney and others are making their own personal decision to fight the subpoena as opposed to the White House coming in and saying we've got significant constitutional concerns about this process. Either we're there to assert privileges and protect the interests of the president, make sure executive privilege is protected, make sure classified information is protected. Otherwise, this can't go forward. I don't understand why that has not happened. And this is what the result is. We have an official who is still at the White House, Mr. Vindman. Ms. Williams still at the White House going to testify
every morning
about presidential communications without any chance for the president to participate.
Yeah, and President Trump can't trust any of these people who are around him. I mean, it's a president who is duly elected by the American people, has the right to have people around him who will actually implement his policies.
Okay, we got to take a short commercial break. This is War Room Impeachment live from the Breitbart Embassy. The testimony is going on. Raheem Kassam is going to give us an update. Going to take a short commercial break. We'll return on the John Fredericks in Salem Radio Network.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room Impeachment
on the John Fredericks Radio Network.
We're back live at the Breitbart Embassy. It's 19th of November, the year of our Lord, 2019, and the second week of live testimony in the impeachment inquiry into the 45th President of the United States, Donald J. Trump, is underway. We are here. This show has a duration to it. We're going to go 7 days a week until the day after the acquittal of President Trump in the United States Senate. Raheem, can you give us a quick update on what's happening this morning?
Yeah, I'm just going to rip the other headpiece out, so I have not two voices in my head. I've had Stephen K. Bannon, Tom Fitton, and Jason Miller alongside Alex Vindman and Jennifer Williams in my ear all morning. Jennifer Williams' opening statement, very matter of fact, just laying out the facts. Nothing of particular note in there. Nothing different. No bombshells. Vindman was interesting and is just wrapping up right now. It's interesting in the fact that he hasn't said anything new, but he's alluded to things that he thinks people should be focusing on. So the first and foremost of that were what he calls the disruptive actors. He focuses on his statement a lot on achieving the NSC's goals, achieving national security goals. And he says these two disruptive actors, Lutsenko and Giuliani, were the two who he sees the most disruptive to the NSC's goals of rooting out corruption in Ukraine, of bringing Ukraine out of the Russian orbit and into the
US. He doesn't mention the commander-in-chief's goals.
That's absolutely correct.
The permanent political class, the deep state versus
the national interest, but he doesn't obviously go into who sets the national priorities and who defines what the national interest is.
He ought to read the Constitution.
And they have a narrow view of corruption as well.
I hear they have a few copies in the Capitol. Maybe he'll pick a Constitution up on his way out. The other part of it that was interesting to me was when he talked about the reason there shouldn't be an investigation into the Bidens and the Burisma stuff. He said if that were to happen, he fears that the Ukraine would lose bipartisan support.
It's not his problem.
Exactly.
Right, not his problem.
And that would therefore harm U.S.
That's a political
policy decision. Goals
this brother walked
in
right
Ukraine.
Into it. They walked right into it. What's his body? We're going to jump here to Vitton and Miller. Sorry. His body language. What Mark Meadows and Zeldin and others told us, that this guy's body language was, with all the talk about his testimony that came out, the body language is not as strong as the testimony. He's not a great witness. How's it come out so
far? He's meek. He's clearly unsure. He's stumbling over his words. He's having to repeat himself a couple of times. There was a key line in his statement where he wanted to go and talk about the uniform he's wearing. And he started and he said, the uniform I'm wearing today. And it's these lines that are built for theater, but he's not delivering them.
He didn't break into Ukraine.
So he's admitting the uniform.
He doesn't have the stage presence. But what he did he took on the attacks. He said, attacks against people who are coming up here and testifying are reprehensible. And that is obviously a direct attack on the President of the United States.
Let's go, Fenton. That is a meme that they're playing, that it's witness intimidation. Talk about that.
Well, that's the big witness this week is the Ambassador Sondland, who was allegedly having direct communications with the president about this issue. The only witness so far who has. This is just gossip we're hearing right now. I've never seen the type of witness intimidation we have as it's been directed at
Sondland. What do you mean by that?
He needs to remember that he could be indicted and go to jail for perjury. How many congressmen and leftist observers on air have said that? And if I were Sondland, or if I were his lawyer, I'm not a lawyer, but if I were a lawyer and I were Sondland's lawyer, I'd be seriously telling him to take the Fifth at this point.
And so, Tom, what I think this is, and look, tomorrow's Gordon Sondland testimony is everything. This is all a buildup.
Why?
To
because
Gordon
he's the direct. He has direct knowledge.
He is the one who's been speaking with the president. He's spoken with Mayor Giuliani. He is the one that they're trying to make this some kind of capital crime. So all of these efforts, Vindman today, this entire buildup, they want to put the pressure on Sundland to not show up tomorrow or to take the fifth or to push for immunity, because they know if he takes one of those, this entire town shuts down. It melts down. People are freaking out. I think the Democrats want to push him, scare him into not talking tomorrow.
And if I'm President Trump, I'd say to Ambassador Sondland, we did nothing wrong. Tell him everything I said, because I'll say it again. Yeah. The Ukrainians should have been investigating Burisma. Why are we giving them all this money? They're so corrupt. And if there's anything we should all see as Americans, why are we involved in Ukraine? We have these bureaucrats trying to treat the Ukrainians like chess pieces on a board,
right,
pretending that we're going to solve the Ukrainian corruption issues. Are you kidding me?
Well, that's all a point. This is all their... It did get in the face of Russia. This is the Brussels guys. This is to get them in the EU, get them into NATO. This whole fiasco starts.
We're not getting in the face of Russia. Who knows if this is so corrupt? Who knows what side we're supporting there?
What happens tomorrow if he takes the fifth or he gets an immunity deal in this city?
Oh, I think it would be a blow up. But, you know, in the end, this is why he should just be forthright. And defenders of the president should defend.
As the president says, no games.
Yeah,
just go up there.
Yeah, this is not a scandal. That we're pretending this is a scandal. It was a perfectly appropriate for the president to be asking questions and making the deep state uncomfortable. That's what he's doing his job. Frankly, he should call the Ukrainians back and make sure they are doing the darn investigation.
Exactly. So, Tom, I want you to break down for us. We've seen Adam Schiff throughout all these legal allegations against President Trump. We have bribery, perjury, extortion, quid pro quo, obstruction, witness intimidation. I'm sure by the time today and tomorrow are over, we'll have several more legal allegations. I don't know if we have jaywalking in there. Maybe we have, you know, maybe as they try to pin the OJ murders on him. I don't know. But, Tom, break this down for us.
Well, these are lateral passes they're throwing down the field in the hopes they get to the goal of impeachment. And it's
I mean, this is they're trying to move the chains.
Yeah, they're just doing whatever they can. And bribery is the latest because they had a poll. They literally did focus groups, according to the Washington Post, and they found bribery worked. But there's no bribery.
Because you're saying quid pro quo was too complex, too much Latin.
Yeah, I mean, that's you know, lawyers in D.C. know what that means, and no normal person uses that phrase. Bribery, again, is a legal phrase, and they may think that may work, but people might say... Well,
that hardwires them into the Constitution, too. It's not high crimes, not just high crimes and misdemeanors, treason and bribery.
There's a reason they didn't say bribery to begin with, because then people say, well, what's your case? And there is no case.
Why do you say there's no case on bribery?
Because the idea that the president making an issue about aid in response to corruption by another country is, quote, bribery is absurd. And if you're going to start using legal crimes to try to impeach the president, it highlights the corruption of the one-sided show trial that was going on now and the coup nature of it. You're being accused of a crime, and you don't have the ability to defend yourself. Remember, there's no defense by the president being presented today. The Republicans are only asking questions at the sufferance of the Democrats.
In the grand jury phase like this, is this the time to present the defense of the president, or is that the trial?
This isn't a grand jury. This is an impeachment. And the president has a right to confront his accusers. It's a God-given right. The Sixth Amendment recognizes it, but it's also a God-given right. And the American people expect the president to be able to call witnesses and question. Giuliani should be at the hearings, but not as a witness, but as a counsel for the president, asking questions of people like Vindman.
This is War Room Impeachment. Tom Fenton today from Judicial Watch, Raheem Ghassan, Jason Miller. We're going to take a short commercial break. We'll return live to the Breitbart Embassy in a moment.
War Room Impeachment. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome back to the Breitbart Embassy. We're live on War Room Impeachment, John Frederick Radio Network, Salem Radio Network, America's Voice.news. Raheem, the testimony is going on. Any summary of what's happened so far?
Yeah, so Adam Schiff is currently asking the questions and asked originally a question of Jennifer Williams, the Pence staffer, asking about the September 18th phone call.
I haven't heard of a September 18th phone call.
Well, the September 18th phone call
was
after the money went. It was between Zelensky and Pence, and broadly speaking, the readout of the call was just about the productive, you know, following up on the productive meeting of September the 1st in Warsaw, meeting at the UN General Assembly, the prospective meeting at the UN General Assembly, and the Vice President commending Zelensky's administration for its bold action to tackle corruption through legislative comprehensive reforms, and offered full U.S. support for these efforts. But Adam Schiff wanted to know more about the call. The call is still classified, and Jennifer Williams said that she would not publicly speak about that call, although she did offer to clarify some things in a classified setting, either in person or in writing. But it was interesting that the lawyer jumped in right there and said, we're not answering that question. The key moment of this morning so far, however, has been, as we expected, from Lieutenant Colonel Alex Vindman, who was asked by Adam Schiff if he gave any advice to the incoming President Zelensky when he went over for the inauguration. Vindman was part of the relatively low to medium tier delegation that was sent over, and Vindman said, yes, I did give the new President of Ukraine some advice. He said, number one, I told him to be cautious on Russia and in its provocations, and number two, to stay out of U.S. domestic politics.
Undermining the President of the United States. First of all, that is an adverse analysis of the President's policy, which was not encouraging the Ukrainians to intervene in our elections. He wanted accountability about what the Ukrainians had already done and whether they were protecting Biden or not. But for him to go and even if the President told him to do that, it's not his business to go in and undermine him like that.
Mid-level guy.
We've got a Pentagon officer going in and countermanding the commander-in-chief?
Yeah. Junior, real quickly, on Judicial Watch, give me a minute on Judicial Watch. It's become one of the stalwart institutions in the conservative movement. How do people find out more? Where do they go? What are you guys doing?
Well, we're on Facebook and Twitter and at Tom Fitton for me, at Judicial Watch, judicialwatch.org. We've got hundreds of Freedom of Information Act requests, thousands of them actually, dozens of lawsuits. And we're waiting for documents about the alleged whistleblower. We're waiting for documents about Biden. We have three lawsuits on Biden. The President should say transparency on everything here. Let's get it out.
Tee up today and tomorrow.
Yep. Tuesday afternoon, it'll be Kurt Volker and Tim Morrison, two officials or former officials who will make it very clear from their testimony that there's no quid pro quo, no bribery. These are folks that Republicans are optimistic about, and everything is going to tomorrow with Gordon Sondland, the U.S. ambassador to the EU. This is what it's all coming down to, which, by the way, I'd point out that Morrison said that he was constantly trying to fluff up and prop up his connections with President Trump. You're going to see this coming back in a big way tomorrow.
Okay, you're listening to War Room Impeachment. We'll be back here at 9 a.m. tomorrow on the John Fredericks Radio Network, also Salem Broadcasting and America's Voice.news. Special edition tonight, 5 p.m. We'll summarize the testimony today. Stephen K. Bannon, thank you very much.